You're all with Radio Freedom on Community Radio 2XX 98.3 FM, and that track was I with Grave New World, and before that we were listening to Joe Descano and Michael Smith and the Anarchist World this week from 3CR in Melbourne, and that comes to us courtesy of the Community Radio Satellite.
So, last week I missed the program, shamefully. I was away on my Easter holiday, so I heard you played a few tracks off the internet of the DC protest. That's right, isn't it?
Off the what?
Off the DC protest on the internet?
Yep. Yes, that's correct.
So I just, you know...
Must have been here. I thought, don't worry.
So I thought, you know, what do you think? What do you think of what's been going on in DC? Is it a, you know, is it a good thing, or it's just been a complete waste of time?
Well, I don't think it's never a waste of time to try something. I don't think you can ever, you know, try and because, I mean, they had fantastic victories in Seattle when the International Monetary, no, when the World Bank was meeting there last year, and they had, you know, great success there in stopping that meeting going ahead for a while.
Yeah.
Basically, and so, you know, I suppose buoyed by that, they decided, well, let's try and do it again. Yeah. So I don't think, from that point of view, I don't think it was a waste of time. Obviously, you know, the police this time had, you know, learnt their lesson a bit well, and also probably the layout of Washington as opposed to Seattle probably helped them as well. And so obviously, you know, that they sort of lost the initiative to a certain extent there. But in terms of actually trying, you know, to stop the World Bank or the IMF or any of those other sort of organisations from meeting, I think is an absolutely positive thing.
Yeah.
And whatever, you know, whether you're trying to do it, you know, holding hands and singing songs, or whether you're trying to do it in more direct ways, I think, I mean, certainly I'd always prefer the more direct way. I don't think holding hands, singing songs is ever going to stop that sort of meeting. I don't think it's going to convince those people. I mean, if holding hands, singing songs convince people not to be bastards, then we wouldn't be having this show now. We wouldn't have had World War I, we wouldn't have had World War II, we wouldn't have had, you know, the bloody 300 years war in, 30 years war in, wherever that happened many hundreds of years ago, because those things, you know, wouldn't have happened if all it took was, you know, holding hands and singing songs. So from the point of view, a lot of people took that sort of idea that we could stop the World Bank, rather, us here couldn't do much, that they could stop the World Bank and the IMF by those sort of very, very passive protest actions. I think that was very unfortunate, because it's not. You can't convince those people. I mean, otherwise it would have happened a long time ago. So from that point of view, that was a waste. But those people who tried to take a more direct route, whether it was trying to, you know, stop people, stop delegates to that meeting getting in, was a, you know, very positive thing. Or actually trying to, once it had got underway, some people did try and, you know, storm, or very poor attempt to storm the building where the meeting was taking place. And again, that was a sort of positive thing, I thought.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, in Seattle, like, they managed to stall it for one day, and that wasn't even like a meeting day. That was a, it was just sort of an introductory day. So, and here in DC, they didn't manage to stall any of the delegates for any day. So, and it's like, I was a bit sort of, you know, they sort of failed. They were going to go from Seattle, which is one day, and they were going to go to DC, and they were going to shut them down for at least one day or 2 days or something. But they didn't at all. So initially, I was pretty disappointed. But from reading on, it seems that the people out there in the US are sort of a bit, you know, energized by this action. They seem to have learnt a lot, and they're still pretty happy. They think that they're going to go on to greater things. Is that the impression you got, or...?
Well, I suppose people can always read into things what they like, and I think certainly if it does spur more people to become involved in direct action, then it can only be a positive thing. But I think if they're just going to run into the same trap of, you know, giving the police, you know, very advanced notice of these actions, which I suppose is going to be impossible to avoid, seeing there are various obvious targets for protest action and some planning has to go. If they're going to go the same tactics, I think that they're going to be doomed to failure, because the police will, you know, have, you know, demonstrated they could, you know, push back people this time, and I think they'll have learnt their lesson. And so I think, you know, probably if it does get more people involved and they can think of more creative tactics to get around the police, then I think it will be, you know, a very positive thing.
Yeah, this is the, not just talking about, there's not this sort of a, it's not a them sort of thing, it's in that the, you know, a bunch of, you know, what, American, liberals, you know, and a bunch of hippies and stuff. I mean, there was the radical anti-capitalist bloc, which was mostly made up of anarchists, was quite successful there. I mean, they seem to be wanting to go on, so what do you think they're, Well, I mean, just from the anarchist point of view, do you think we should continue, or...
Absolutely. I mean, I think stopping the IMF and the World Bank is something that should be continued against.
What about tactically?
Or anything like that. But, well, what do you mean? Exactly?
Well, the Black Bloc sort of had a lot of success in what they did, in that they sort of pulled back from, you know, this idea of violence by window smashing. I don't think the anarchist ever said that what they did was wrong, but they sort of said that, you know, maybe... Just to keep, you know, just for in the name of solidarity, so that we can keep together, that we'll refrain from too much window smashing.
Well, I think on one block, I think window smashing is pointless.
Well, it is.
I mean, I don't see anyone who goes to a protest and says, "Oh, I'm going to smash windows," and that's doing a good thing, that's being a useful thing. I fail to see the logic in that argument. But I think in terms of actively organising as anarchists, and showing A, that anarchists do organise, it's not just, you know, what the media would like us to think, which is a bunch of disorganised people, or what's happening in Zimbabwe or Bosnia or anything like that, showing that anarchists can organise, can cooperate together to do positive things, and raising the profile of anarchy in general is a very good thing. So I think in terms of, you know, blatantly advertising themselves, yes, we are anarchists, we're not ashamed of that, and if the media want to call us anarchists, well then, you know, that's one of the few true things the media will report about these protests, and, you know, that's a good thing. And I think, yeah, definitely in organising a way and sort of bad choice of words, sort of getting away from, you know, smashing things, saying, look, we are anarchists, yes, we are, you know, not going to protest peacefully, if peacefully means, you know, passive, you know, non-violence, doing nothing, but by the same token, it's not about running around and wanting destruction. We do have very definite aims, we do know what we want, and we know, you know, we have a plan how to get them. So from that point of view, actively organising like that is a very good thing, yes.
Well, from that, yeah. But they did sort of do that in DC, and then Seattle, they had this, you know, it was dubbed a group, you know, the anarchists from Oregon it was, then you had these sort of, and then I saw later an interview with them on 60 Minutes where they went on, and it was their 60 Minutes in America, that is, and they're pushing a whole lot of anarcho-primitivist ideas, which is a one various strain of anarchism, which is all based on, you know, going back to the forest, which is not by any means the strongest form of anarchist ideas, but or even, you know, historically or even currently. But they in Seattle they smashed a lot of windows and they said, oh well, you know, we're directly attacking property, and then that was a bit sort of questionable, that, you know, it was a bit weak really, that they were really doing anything. But in DC they seem to have got their act a bit together. The plan was, in my view, tell me if you think I'm wrong, but in my view it was pretty reasonable, that, you know, you got the IMF, they're one of the biggest you know, world bodies on running the economy as it is at the moment, which is, of course, to screw over normal people. But the IMF, one of these big organisations, they say they did the basic plan that, well, the protesters will put a cordon around the convention centre so the delegates can't get in. Now, that tactically didn't work. The delegates did get in. But at the same time, the anarchists played their role in that, it seems, quite admirably, in that they went around and they helped back up sections of the line that were about to fall over, and when they did find out later that the delegates got through, they said that there was reports that they were seriously discussing trying to go and storm the convention centre, which unfortunately didn't happen. But so, I mean, it's not just a case of that they should go off and do something else, you know, organise somewhere else. I mean, they seem to have a plan that's working. Like what they did in DC was a coherent thing. Do you think they could take that on into another city and maybe do something else, be successful that time?
Well, why not? I mean, that's the whole idea of organising and planning, is to know what you want to do and have, you know, backup plans when things don't go. I think it's going to depend on what the situation is. How easy is it to access?
Well, to a large degree, yeah. I mean, it's bullshit because you can always bring the people in by helicopter or go and host it down in, you know, Nigeria or somewhere where the government's got no problem with killing people. But I suppose it really answers the question, doesn't it? It's not going to work, is it? Apart from sort of drawing attention to the World Bank and all that, and at the most, it's going to inconvenience the delegates by meaning that they can't go off and have a nice Hilton Hotel experience out in D.C. They're going to have to go up to this horrible third world country. But
they won't see the horrible side of it.
Well, the horrible side is that the room service is not so good. it's some interesting questions. I mean, should they continue the protesting, or should they should take it to another level? And if that level is, what is it? You know, I mean, I suppose it's a question of how do you really hurt these people? I mean, you can hurt them in one way by trying to stop their meetings, but as we've sort of been talking about, that's got a lot of flaws in it, and it's really something which a lot of I'm going to call it sort of the hippie sort of direct action movement has this idea that it's a very powerful symbolic protest as opposed to the direct action actually doing something protest. So to really hurt these people, what do we got to do? We got to hurt them where they really got their interests, which is what we've talked about a lot in this program, which is the capitalist system, which is that they basically get most of their wealth from and power from where? They get it from business. And if you look at business, it all comes down to people doing work. So, I mean, what do you see would be a really practical way to do it? I mean, unionism, or I'm just thinking, like, where can we take it from here? Because it'd be a bit depressing, wouldn't it, if it just sort of died here?
Well, in terms of specifically the IMF or the World Bank, is very difficult for us per se to do much about it, seeing they don't operate so much in countries. They don't operate in Australia so much at all. Their sphere of operation is more the third world countries and Africa and the like. So I suppose at the end of the day, if you want to stop the IMF and the World Bank, it's got to be people in those countries who are affected by it. I suppose standing up and saying, well, look, we know we don't accept that we should have to pay back loans that were not taken out by us. I mean, when you think about that notion, if I got a loan to buy a house and I defaulted on it, the bank isn't going to come after James and say, right, you've got to pay back this guy's loan. Okay, so I think to a large part, so that's ridiculous. Why should people in these countries have to pay for loans that were not taken out by them, that were taken out by governments in those countries, taken out by business in those countries for their own benefit? Indonesia being the classic example, how much of that money that was lent to Indonesia for economic development ended up straight in the hands of Suharto? So why should the people in Indonesia have to suffer paying that back? So I suppose if you really want to hurt the World Bank, it's got to be people in those countries, just saying, no, we're not going to pay that back. And that's not going to happen by the government. That's going to happen through action by people in those countries, whether it's through fight backs against austerity conditions, which might be workplace struggles, community struggles in those countries. At the end of the day, that's what's going to hurt the World Bank if those people are rejecting the World Bank and the IMF systems. That's what's going to hurt the World Bank. And it's very, I think, that being negative, it's very limited to what we could do in countries like Australia that don't participate in that. I mean, banks in Australia might lend money to the World Bank and to other countries, but short of taking over those banks and cancelling those loans, and there's very little I think we can do. I mean, I don't want to sound negative, and James is probably going to shoot my argument to pieces, but...
No, it sounds quite reasonable. I'm just thinking that also. I mean, there is an example of that. There's the Zapatista uprising in Chiapas in Mexico. They've done quite well to sort of kick very strongly referred to as the neoliberal thing of the whole World Bank and the restructuring and the cash crops, everything, all that sort of thing. They've done that, and there have been ways in which us in the first world have helped them. I just can't think of them off the top of my head. There's been things like...
Well, there's been a large amount of just aid, financial aid, so to speak, to those people in Mexico. In terms of getting resources to them. And not direct cash in hand, but resources of other kind to those people. which has no doubt helped them.
Yeah, well, actually, I heard there's a group in America called Free Radio Berkeley, which is one of those free radio, which is another term you might actually mean something to you, which is a pirate radio, which is going out there and broadcasting illegally. They I believe they got a team together and they went across the border and they took a whole lot of transmitters with them and taught the Zapatista people how to use these radios so they could these stations so that they could start transmitting their own programs and stuff. So that was one way. I've also had circumstances of professionals here in the first world traveling over there to help with their expertise in building sanitary things. There's all the sort of the infrastructure stuff that takes sort of a degree of knowledge that we get in the universities of our country, which you're not likely to get out in the hills of the Chippewa region. Also, another strong one's been the just keeping the media eye on that area, isn't it? Because if there was a slaughter going on there by the Mexican army, then it would look really bad, and they couldn't really justify it. Although, I mean, it's not like that hasn't happened.
Yeah, but there have been plenty of countries who've done slaughters and couldn't justify it, and you know.
But it all depends if it's in the eyes, doesn't it?
Well, Tiananmen Square, in China.
Yes. But trade was at fault there. That was trade was at risk. You know, we couldn't have stepped on that. Things would have got more expensive.
Well, that's true, I suppose. But that's not sort of one way you can help, is by sort of rejecting, I suppose, you know, Australian companies' involvement in those areas. Like, I mean, the local branches here, like, could, you know, solidarity strikes and say, look, you know, we don't agree with how you're, you know, engaging in trade in China. BHP, an example, we don't agree with the way you're employing, you know, labour in China at very cheap rates using their industrial tactics. So that's something, I suppose, practically that, you know, BHP Works, just an example, could do. But I'm sure they have many other reasons to go on strike besides that, but that could just be another one of the many issues they could raise with the friendly management down in Melbourne. Very funny place to manage mines in Newcastle, Broken Hill, rural Western Australia, rural New South Wales, etc. But, you know, that's the way it works.
Yeah, well, sort of, I mean, with the DZ protest, it's been very heartening to see what's been going on there, but from a lot of the news that's coming out there, you got a lot of that sort of American vibe on things where a lot of the time they seem to get a little bit too excited about what's going on. They don't seem to slow down and think about it. So, I mean, these protests don't have much more than a symbolic value to them, so I think it would be pretty much a mistake for us here in Australia or, you know, other anarchists, say, over in Germany or that, to think that, you know, you can change these organisations by attacking them in the first world. I mean, I think that they really have not much more value than that of a symbolic value, and in a way of energising people to realise that, you know, the institutions that are the state. I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, students out there and older people who've realised that, hey, maybe the police really aren't our friends. They're not just there to protect us from the nasty criminal people, but you know, a good bit of a mace in the face, or pepper spray, sorry. Sort of has been very convincing against that, and also the fact that, you know, what the police and the government find important, which is, I mean, I don't know if you realise the scope of what happened in DC. They had cordoned off something like 50, 100 blocks of DC and told pretty much the whole government, a lot of the government departments in the area, for the employees not to turn up, which effectively shut down the federal government. So, I mean, yeah. So you wouldn't want to rely on this as a tactic to win it all, would you?
Well, no. And I suppose at the end of the day, it's, you know, it's governments in these first world countries who participate in the World Bank and the IMF and financial institutions in the first world countries. Now, governments, you know, could destroy the IMF and World Bank overnight. They could just simply say, right, don't have to pay off this debt. As soon as you're not paying off this debt, then what reason do the IMF and the World Bank have to exist? As soon as you say, we're going to positively help, you know, these third world countries through, you know, grants in kind, you know, of, say, equipment for infrastructure, training for their people, whatever, then the IMF and the World Bank exist, you know, will cease to exist overnight. But what government's going to do that? You know, you can say, oh, John Howard's not going to do it. Do you think Kim Beazley's going to do it? Do you think the Democrats, if they got in, would do it? They wouldn't last 2 seconds. Any government, you know, any country wouldn't last 2 seconds if they did that, because you have all these banks who are making a fortune off this. I mean, I mean, the principal of these loans has been paid off, you know, thousands of times over. But they get, you know, the income they earn off these loans is not taxable, you know, in most countries. And in many countries, for example, Britain, you know, the government has allowed them to take a certain amount of money equal to these loans and invest that tax-free, just in case it doesn't get paid back. And so, you know, if the government decided tomorrow, well, stuff it, you know, these countries don't have to pay this off, these banks are going to, you know, be shitting, they can be shitting bricks, you know, you could bloody build a bloody, you know, the twin trade towers in bloody Malaysia from the amount of bricks that would be shat by, you know, bankers if that happened. And they would use their economic power to stop the government doing it, because that's where the power, you know, the power, true political power lies, not in the government, but in, you know, in the financial institutions and industry. And so, basically, short of getting rid of capitalism in these countries, it's not going to, you know, stop the IMF and the World Bank operating in those countries. So, you know, being nice and utopian, that's the ultimate. That's what is going to stop the IMF and the World Bank eventually. But it's, you know, but in terms of direct change now, that is, you know, is up to the people in those countries who are affected, you know, by IMF and World Bank austerity programs.
It's sort of an anarchist message, isn't it? So the anarchist message is that you have to do it yourself.
Well, that's the sort of thing you get put on an anarchist radio program, doesn't it? Just tends to slip out sometimes. I don't know what I was thinking. I apologise to all those, you know, all those big, rich businessmen out there listening.
So what have we got next on the agenda of...
Well, it's rapidly running out of time, so next on the agenda is very quick wrap-up. Wanker of the Week award goes to Ross Lightfoot, Western Australia Senator, who came up with the brilliant thing that if the Australian government is going to take farmers from Zimbabwe in as refugees, they should not take any black farmers. They should only take white farmers, because we only want a certain type of people in this country, was essentially what he said. So for that comment, Ross Lightfoot gets the Wanker of the Week award, and hopefully someone might ship him off to bloody Zimbabwe and give him a farm, a particularly large farm, you know, a few thousand hectares might do, and he can get what's coming to him. For that, not that we endorse, you know, killing people, but...
Oh, no, these people are a bit nuts.
This is true. As I said last week, I find it very hard to have sympathy for 60-year-old farmers who got their farms when, you know, Zimbabwe was still a colonial, you know, under colonial rule from Britain, because they knew exactly what they were doing when they got, you know, got those grants of land. Very quickly, well, we're talking about Anzac Day. Well, Joe Toscano was talking about Anzac Day earlier in the program. Wasn't it disgusting to see John Howard over there? You know, almost looked like he was, you know, about to ejaculate all over the dais while he's giving his little spiel of, you know, defending Australian freedoms and all that. So, obviously, one person who we hope is unfortunately not in Australia at the moment, but who was listening to the show earlier on, John Howard, if you could just, you know, listen to him, you know, if you could listen to the true meaning of what Anzac Day should be about. That's what really gives me the shits about Anzac Day is, you know, how at the end of the day what gets celebrated more than anything is, you know, the great war heroes, you know, who are invariably the generals who sat on their arse and did nothing or just gave orders. Winston Churchill of Britain is one of the classic examples of that. You know, the great wartime prime minister, the great war hero of the First World War, who, if we want to talk about Anzac Day, Winston Churchill was the person who directed all those little boats into the wrong place, and therefore we can blame him indirectly for the death of all those people. So, you know, it's
just... In the same vein, though, I mean, if they had been directed to the right place, they would have been massacring Turks, which was of no real gain to Australians.
Well, far more Turks were killed than Australians, you know, if you want to be truthful about the matter. But just, you know, just think when you hear this stuff about great war heroes, think about who really was actually doing the fighting, who actually was, you know, putting their lives on the line, because it wasn't the great war heroes like Winston Churchill or Field Marshal Haig, who's in his bunker in bloody, you know, well away from the front line in that particular episode of World War One. So I suppose it's like most things, the people governments and, you know, official historians want to put up as heroes are usually the people who are not anything of the sort and don't deserve the title. Well, we're running out of time here on Radio Freedom, Anarchy on the Airwaves, on Community Radio, 2XX98.3 FM. Just a reminder, if you'd like to get in contact with us here at Radio Freedom for any reason whatsoever, you can write to us, care of PO Box 3859, Western Creek, ACT, 2611, that's PO Box 3859, Western Creek, ACT 2611.